Hello and welcome to another epic edition of the Mad Axeman podcast. This time I'm joined by two Daves, a Mark, a Simon and a Gordon, as we discuss the list that we all took to the recent competition in Alicante in Spain. Of course, as it's Spain, there's some culinary discussion, there's a bit of tourism, we look at motorway service station vending machines, and in a rare departure, we have our first ever advert slap bang in the middle of this podcast as well, supporting all the good stuff that you hear on madaxeman.com. So there's all sorts of stuff. This also appears as a YouTube video where you can actually get to see the Arminists. Otherwise, you can look them up on the wiki. So sit back, enjoy the podcast. This means war. Well, welcome to this video and audio Army List and Stuff podcast. And those beaming faces, if you're watching this on YouTube, or slightly manic faces. And Simon, you're in the middle of that doing a kind of Australian, this is a cricket ball sort of thing, aren't you? With that orange, unless you're just about to do it. So this is us at Alicante, or nearly all of us. In fact, not even at Alicante, at Seville. So... In the photo, you've got Mr. Saunders, Mr. Aussie Simon, and special guest star this week, never before appeared on the podcast, Gordon.
Yo.
Yeah, that's the least Gordon thing I've ever heard you say, yo. And then not in the picture, but sort of in the frame, is Mark from Bristol, commanding the world in your bunker with your headphones on and your world map behind you.
Absolutely.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
And then there's Mr. Dave Allen, who looks like he's taking a selfie slightly weirdly of himself in the photo. And we've got hopefully a video clip of him. But the format of this, without further ado, is really that we're just going to just quickly talk about our epic trip to Alicante, which Mark joined us in Alicante after we'd done Granada and we'd also done Cordoba. And then talk about the lists that we used in the competition and try and see if we can make them any better. So it was a kind of an epic trip. I think we started off in the world's one of the oldest Jewish cocktail bars or something, was it? In Cordoba. That was particularly epic. I think, Dave, were you deep into pickled fish by this time?
It was bullfighting.
Jewish bullfighting bar, wasn't it? That was it.
But I showed this to some friends of mine and they said that the bullfighter on the wall, a very, very famous bullfighter from Spain, whose name I've got no idea, but he's very famous.
It was a fabulous little bar with a fabulous guy with fabulous facial hair. I thought he was excellent. And then the Mesquite Mosque in Cordoba, which we were staying directly opposite, which was, I thought that was just epic. Absolutely.
It was astounding.
Yeah. I think it's not often you get a bunch of war gamers who've traveled around a fair bit, pretty much quiet, just walking around going, actually, this worked really well. This is quite incredible.
Yeah. Well, I'd been before, but you guys, it was new to you guys, wasn't it? Did you have any expectations for it, or was it, how did it map onto expectations?
Well, it surpassed mine. And I thought that was helped by us living next door to it and being able to wander in as soon as the doors opened before there was any tour groups or anything. So we had three quarters of the place. Well, I had three quarters of the place to myself for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, the emptiness really, really helped, didn't it? You've been before, haven't you, Mark?
I think. Yeah, many years ago, but it is fantastic. I think it's the scale and the size of the place. You walk into it and it just goes on and on and on. And the architecture is such that it draws your eye right in. And then you've got that very Spanish thing of them plonking a church right in the middle of it just to make a statement.
which is just like the most bonkers thing in the world. And then on the way down from there, so we did that in the morning and a couple of museums as well, we stopped at randomcastle.com or .es, I guess it would be, where they appear to have a working trebuchet. I think, Dave, you nearly had a go at this with the other Dave, didn't you?
I tried loading it, and it was remarkably easy. So it was a good idea to lower it gently back into position.
Yeah. We could have lobbed rocks.
Very, very easily, and it looked like someone could have a very bad industrial accident or land something in the labouring village, I thought.
We were thinking to take out the ticket office with the trebuchet.
Yes.
See if we could to get into the castle for free. And then into Granada, we ended up staying in the world's tiniest car park, or not staying in the car park, but parking in the world's tiniest car park, and then going to a bar to have, just across the road, to have a remarkable range of different culinary items, I think, including some rather staggering meatballs. These are some of the most imposing albondigas I remember seeing anywhere, really. That certainly needs to be absorbed with a dose of salt. But then in Granada, it was an early morning, and Dave, you even found us a bus, which getting on random public transport abroad is kind of miraculous.
Yeah, I don't think I was going to make the walk up that hill too easily at my age.
You were heavily motivated.
Also, in fairness, in Granada, on the day that we went to the Alhambra, it was cold, wet and miserable. It was raining. It was a reasonably steep hill. And then we then discovered when we walked, tried to walk down from the castle, half the tourist routes into the castle were all shut down for maintenance. So it was really good we found the bus ride, because that could have been quite fun. Not.
Yeah, they did make it really difficult to get into that castle, didn't they? Mark's back, and they made it very difficult to get into the castle, which I guess was historically accurate. And this was the fountain, the famous 12 woolly dogs fountain, is it called, or something like that?
It's a lion. A lion.
Okay. Well, maybe sculpture in the 12th century wasn't quite up to the standards of realism which we expect today. But I think, Gordon, you managed to pick one of these up for baggage, did you?
I did, and it's a long-term project, but I'm going to turn that fountain into a super-sized baggage.
Fantastic.
Surrounded by Middle Eastern civilians just swanning about in gold robes. No, but again, the Alhambra, I thought, was staggering. It's surprising how it's actually survived, really, why nobody's taken it to bits and just sort of carted it off in pieces and stolen it like most other monuments. It's a bit of a mystery, but we'll probably do a bit more tourism maybe on another pod.
It was quite an imposing palace, because, you know, we've all done Versailles and various other Western European castles and palaces, which just go over the top in gold and all that. And here it was a lot more simplistic, in that it was, you know, a lot of Arabic calligraphy, geometric designs, but just the sheer scale of it was so awe-inspiring. You walked into some of the rooms, you stop there and go, actually, this is impressive. And it would have been really stunning back in the day when it was fully coloured. But even now, just being in white, like, you know, this courtyard was quite impressive.
It was staggering, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm.
And then on the way there, we stopped at the world's weirdest service station, of which I don't think I'm going to ask anyone to comment about what was on sale in this vending machine. So if you're listening on the podcast and you're not watching this on YouTube, you're missing out, but I think we're probably about, I don't know what the time is, into this one.
Pre-watershed, yeah.
Yeah, pre-watershed. Yeah, we probably can't really talk about that at all, but lorry drivers must be very comfortable or uncomfortable on the longer parts of the journeys, I think. And then we're in now an airport hotel in Alicante, or pseudo airport hotel, even though it wasn't near the airport, but it was an airport hotel, wasn't it?
And it was an island surrounded by motorways.
Yeah, but entirely functional and nice and clean and bright and air conditioned and not smelly, well lit, completely bizarre for wargaming. And that was it. That was the room where it was all happening, with flags of many nations on display, and all of us hiding down there. I can pick out a few, myself included. And I think it looks like, by the looks of it, we're starting with Mr. Fry. And your list, you're first up with your military-themed T-shirt on there. So your world map, your military theming, it's all good. So talk to us about, why Visigoths, and tell us about you know, what's in the list and what's the structure? Yeah. Of course, it's 200, so, it's 200 points. It's three core. It's pretty chunky at 27, which is a 12, an 8, and a 6, 45 camp. But look, take it away. Tell us why, and tell us what your theory was.
Okay, so I'm assuming you guys can hear me. Unfortunately, I've had to switch to phone. My technology packed up on me, so
no, all you're good. Coming through loud and clear, loud and clear.
Super. So I'm on my phone. So this is a very old army. This was painted by me 20 plus years ago, and
you're not that old. You're not that old, surely, Mark. No.
Even older than you think. Okay. But I've not played with it for at least 20 years, and it desperately needed rebasing, not only as part of the project to rebase armies for ADLG, which is, I know is something dear to your heart, Tim, but generally the old basing was pretty, let's just call it unattractive, to say the least. So that was number one. Secondly, Alicante had a great theme, which is for me, which was no Romans. And actually, the real bête noire for Visigoths is big Roman armies. You know, all of those full fat Marks and Spencer's legionaries with just about everything will kill this stone dead very quickly. So that's a big plus. It also is a barbarian army with a strategist, which is nice. I like a strategist, gives you that edge for moving the terrain around, etc. And with this army, I felt that the terrain is quite important. We'll come on to that in a second. On its plus side as well, it has this strange non-ally ally, which is the Roman Federati, which is the third corps, which consists basically of Roman auxilia, quite powerful Roman auxilia on the basis of their medium foot, swordsman, impact. And you could have all four of them with support if you wanted to. I could only, in my jigging of the list, I could only get to two. But that produces quite a tasty bit of kit for going into rough terrain. But also, it'll actually stand up quite well on its own in the open. So, and it gives you that control and flexibility where the rest of the army, basically, you've got to point it and it'll run, basically. And the other thing, and you mentioned it, is you can afford to have a fortified camp. So all this light cavalry that I envisage would be roaming the fields isn't a great worry for me. It's the, you know, I don't mind it coming in, but basically it can have its fun, if you like, trying to chase my camp, but it can't get to it. And I suppose it's got a lot of punch. I mean, just about everything in there has got is fairly meaty. I could muck around with it a bit. You can have the cavalry elite. You can have some of the foot elite. But actually, this is about numbers. And the reason the terrain is important for this army, for me, isn't about getting terrain that you can hide in. It's about putting terrain down where you can basically squeeze your enemy into a killing zone. So I tended to, I was lucky. I won the terrain five times, which is good out of six. Was it six games? Yeah, six games. And on most of those games, I got down a waterway, I got down a marsh, and I got down an impassable piece of terrain, all of which squeezes your opponent into an area where they have to deploy and you can go after it, basically. When I lost games badly, it's because my opponent got rid of most of the terrain. So that's the theory behind the army, as I say. But it's a labour of love as well, an old army that I've played with for many years under other sets of rules that I wanted to adjust for ADLG.
Interesting.
Very beautiful it was.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. I can't paint like that now. I'd need to have glasses like, you know, the bottom of bottles to paint at that level.
Old Donington figures, I believe.
They were. They are the old Donington originals that you can get from, Ancient and Modern, I think it is. Yeah. Thank you.
Intriguing. Okay, so Gordon, do you want to start off and ask your questions? I've got a couple of things, but
okay. I mean, the first thing is, I mean, I took a barbarian army with a strategist, but a very different kind of one, on the assumption that I too could have a big army that was pretty one-dimensional, but was big. And even though most of it is not elite, and yours isn't elite at all, it's just an awful lot of stuff for your opponent to deal with.
Yep.
And like most barbarian armies, I suspect that your biggest problem was getting most of those people into a fight. That your more fleet of foot opponents will try to avoid one or more of your corps. And you don't move very fast. And I think that's one of the, if you can just line up with somebody and charge them, it's likely to win just statistically, even though it's all average, just there's so many of you. The problem is, I think most barbarian armies suffer from is getting everybody into a fight. So how did that work for you?
Actually, pretty well. My, just me then. No, sorry. The second game I played against an early Arab with medium camels, and we ended up with a draw because all he did was try and avoid me and try and get around my flanks, and we didn't do it. But most of the rest of the games, I'd have to say, I had pretty much everything into combat. My bete noire, again, is cataphracts and heavy chariot elite impact, and we can come on to that in Simon's list. They just went through me like a hot knife through butter, and absolutely nothing I could do about it. But I agree. I think that's where the terrain came in. Because you're forced to put the impassable on a flank, and it's you can't move it, but obviously you could dice it off. And on one occasion, my opponent threw a five and diced my impassable ground off. But you're really trying to squeeze the enemy into somewhere where he has to fight you, basically. It's a good point.
My two questions would be, four heavy cavalry impetuous kind of on their own. You can get two, I think, heavy cavalry to... which are non-impetuous to kind of go with them when you've got the Romans, to make it kind of a six and give it a bit more maneuverability. And four heavy cavalry just seems almost like not a lot. And I would have thought if you're going to have them, with Gordon's question, they're the ones that move quickly. You know, it's 2 points extra to upgrade them to elite, but swapping one of the infantry warriors to make those four heavy cavalry impetuous, I might have been tempted to do that because then they're just that much more survivable. Is that one of the things you found they kind of blew up, or were you just...
I tended to deploy them as a second line behind the infantry, and then would shift the infantry in one direction or the other, and the cavalry would go through. But you're right, Tim, they were very vulnerable against the wrong sort of cavalry. So, you know, heavy cavalry impact, elite, for example... cataphracts. In one instance, they accidentally fought some camelifracts, so we would draw a veil over that. But you're right. And actually, with hindsight, upgrading those to elite, potentially taking the two Roman or Romanized Federati heavy cavalry to protect their flanks would be very helpful. But on one occasion, they went right through the middle of an Aztec army, taking out his elite troops, but I managed to clear that gap well enough for them to get in without them being damaged. And that was the advantage to them. But yeah, good point.
Yeah. Okay. Dave, any thoughts from you on that one?
27's huge, considering medium impact. I think sacrificing the elites, contrary to what you're just saying, to get the army to 27. I mean, essentially, you've got four heavy cavalry impetuous and 10 heavy swordsmen impetuous. So you're 14 across of your strike force. And if they don't work, they don't work. And then you've got plenty of stuff to hold the flanks with the mediums if you get a waterway down. I think the one interesting thing that we're going to find is that, contrary to what we were doing like 2 years ago, everybody's going for strategists and high initiative.
Yep.
Move the terrain. And one thing, you know, about that is it's interesting how many, well, we'll come on to it, my list is a bit different, but I think it's everybody's going for strategists. That's a really important thing to say. Competitions too much and listening in on this. Yeah. What we're doing is a fashion-led thing, and the rules we're changing to being able to defend, to reduce the terrain, things like that. It makes it very interesting. And it's, you know, normally in the past, we wouldn't have taken a strategist. We'd have said, oh, that's too expensive. I want extra toys.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And the
army's getting bigger. We're going from where we started with 19 and 20 in an army to now, you know, 27. Impetuous heavy cavalry and heavy foot is a big army, a big
little
army.
Thing. Yeah, Simon, yeah, what's your thoughts on it?
I'm a bit like Mark. I'm a big fan of the warband armies, and I was very tempted to bring my Gallic or Mad German or British army to it, to like Hunte. So, but in the end, I couldn't figure out how to use the javelin, the light horse javelin. I do like the idea of having the 14 wide of Impetuous, because it does basically say, here's a problem, deal with that. But I guess, you know, for me, the biggest issue I found with these armies, and something I found, was once someone gets into your flank, there is absolutely nothing you can do just to mitigate two or three cavalry going pack-man on you. So I'm impressed that you managed to get your terrain down far more effectively than I did. Most of the times I got stuck on a billiard table and got absolutely chewed to pieces.
Yeah, Mark, what about the other question, I guess? Did anybody ever get to your camp who fought their way through 27?
There were two instances of light cavalry circling it, and they would have taken it. So in that respect, the points were well paid. I think, if I'm honest, the thing that I was found most disappointing was the two archers. I lost them in every single game. And I think people have become slightly wise to that idea that you put a couple of archers on a flank to shoot down light cavalry. I got mown down by heavy cavalry every time.
Right.
So two light cavalry at the front, two heavy cavalry behind, protected. And then, of course, the moment you get to they're within four, they're straight into those archers. And they're so vulnerable. I mean, yeah, so for me, that was four easy points for an opponent every time. And I think the other thing is I became fixated by the fact that the Federati were Federati, and I kept them all in one corps. Yeah. Actually, what I should have done is split them up and put them on either end of the lines to cover the point that was raised earlier about flanking, because actually with the support, they'll stand up quite well to medium cavalry or heavy cavalry in the open. So being impact. So that was a bit of learning for me. I think I'd rejig it and not get fixated by the history and keep it all the Romans in one division and mix them in there a bit to provide a bit of protection.
Actually, maybe, two Palatini or Auxilia, maybe with support, and one bowman and one light foot bow is still dishing out a lot of firepower, but it's just much, much harder to do. And you could have that on both flanks, couldn't you?
Absolutely. And that's where I got to at the end, was actually that I think that would have helped tremendously, because it gives you the mobility, it's rough terrain in case you need it. And by buying all four of the Palatini with support, it was actually, it was interesting to watch opponents look at it and go, I'm not going near that. And actually, that was interesting for me as well. It was the psychological impact of it. And I think putting a bowman in would have been very helpful. You're right, Tim.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it now. What I'd be tempted to do would be to knock a warrior out of each command, make those both fours, possibly lose the fortified camp as well. So that's 16. That'd be 22 points. Spend eight of it making the nobles in elite, which still leaves you 14. Get a heavy cavalryman in.
Yeah.
Maybe swap a light infantry. Maybe swap some of your light infantry bow and light infantry javelin around and to give them support with those auxilia, and possibly try and squeeze in both of those heavy cavalry that are just the normal ones, so that you've got, you know, two auxilia, one bowman, one light infantry bow, and a heavy cavalryman is sorting out all sorts of things on a flank, isn't it? Joining the attack. And you'd only lose really two warriors worth of width in it. But you gain the ability to protect the bowman, which might be a thing. Yeah. Anybody else with any other suggestions on how these hairy cavalry guys?
I love the bowmen, as you know, and I think they're vital. But if you can manage to use them to shoot your heavy cavalry or your heavy infantry charge in by doing some damage.
Yep.
But that means someone's got to come to you, to come and charge into you. And I think, And I like keeping them together, because shooting at mounted, shooting die roll plus one shooting at mounted plus a friend, it's going to knock mounted down so often and cause them problems. I love it.
So I agree with, I'm of the school of thought, especially with just two bowmen of Mark. So I brought in my Warring States. I had a couple of bowmen, one on each of the big commands. And being that my army is a very big impact army, they were the weakest point, and everyone targeted them. And pretty much anything that could cracked the bowmen in a second, popped out the other side and went, right, which way will I go? So I know they're nice to be able to annoy mounted and all that. In some ways, if you're going to bring a big, mad, impetuous army, you might as well go all in. Especially this type of army, where it doesn't have much bow, have another heavy swordsman go, here's 15 swordsmen and impetuous cavalry. I'll be in your 4UD within, you know, 2 turns. Hello.
Yeah.
And I think when this gets in to something that it can chew, it goes straight through it. So spearmen, even pikemen, I had a couple of pikemen which I just blew to bits. Even I played an Aztec and it did really well against the Aztec, even though they're mainly swordsmen because they're mediums. But as I say, I've got no answer, and I'd welcome any suggestions to how to deal with wall-to-wall cataphracts or Warring State elite heavy chariots, which just literally, I mean, it was like watching someone doing bowling. At the end of the first go, I had, against the Parthian, I had 5 units all on red. So they'd all taken 3 casualties in that first round of combat. So, you know, dice plays a bit of luck in that, but I just can't see any other way around that. You just have to take it on the chin and hope that I can kill a few other things on the way.
Yeah. Well, we'll maybe come to some armies like that or different stories about those sorts of armies in a while. But I think it's now time to say goodbye to the Visigoths. And
this means war.
And move on to our next moment, which appears to be me. Here's me in the process of losing my first game, or it could be losing my second one. I can't remember which way it was, but there was a lot of losing going on the first day. Now I think this is me against a Chinese, Northern Southern Dynasties Chinese army, and this was my nonsensical army. Sorry, we're going to have to go into kind of turn the screen round and go into high visibility mode for this one, because I think I got a bit carried away with trying to have as many different troops in each command as possible, and that became an objective for itself. So it's Mithridatic, the less than the sum of its parts pseudo successor army, I think. And what I tried to do here was, I think, as you said, Mark, you know, I thought there could well be Parthians and cataphracts there. And I thought there could be lots of chunky infantry stuff as well. So this was trying to create an army which wasn't too complicated to use, even though it's all different bits, because it all just forms a line and goes forwards like a sweeping brush. And the idea was there would be sort of enough stuff in any given part of the field to deal with either cataphracts or with lines of infantry and other stuff. So it's basically 2 very big commands of 9 and 11, both led by brilliant generals, which have got a mix of things. So bear with me, I'll take a deep breath. The first one has got 1 spearman, sorry, 2 cataphracts, one of which is elite, 2 elite Galatian foot, 2 pikemen, a light tree sling, a light tree javelin, and a scythe chariot, which lurks at the back and is scary. And the second one has got another heavy spearman. It's got 2 imitation legions who are impact. It's got 2 Thracians. That's the rough terrain force. It's got a crap pikeman. It's got an archer. I'd shoehorned a bowman in there. 2 lightfoot, again, a bow and a javelin. 1 heavy cavalry, average, normal, no impact. I thought it was impact when I submitted the list. I'd obviously not read the army list properly. Slightly disappointed to have that come back and be told, no, they don't have impact. And a skirmishing horseman to play with them. And then the third command, just an ordinary included general, an elite heavy cavalry, and then 2 light cavalry with it, bow and javelin. And basically you've got 2 sweeping brushes that just march forward and are about 7 or 8 wide. And you've got a little command that dicks about on the flank and tries not to lose. And you're trying to occupy the other flank with either 1 light cavalry javelin and 1 heavy cavalry, or even better, terrain and a waterway. so that you don't really have to think, and it can just kind of roll forwards. And if you fight one thing, you shove the cataphracts and the spearmen forward and the pikemen. If you fight something else, you shove the impact foot and the impetuous swordsman and the pikemen forward, and you've got the side chariots lurking in the background to scare people, but not actually do much at all. And it didn't work at all in the first two games. I think I didn't play particularly well, and I got outdone by terrain in the first one against a shooting and charging cavalry army. It's a bit of space. Second one against, trying to think what they were, Hittites. Terrain again didn't feel well, and I suspect I didn't have the rub of the green on the combat. And then it was just sort of submarining up as I started to work out how all the bits fitted together and how important it was not to get them in a traffic jam, and some of the games, and actually what terrain I needed. So I think the apogee of that was playing a Allen army on a basically a half width table, in which one side was entirely terrain, the other was a waterway, and they just literally swept them forwards off the table like brushing dust out of a building site, which I'm very familiar with at the moment. So that was the theory. So anybody got any comments on this nonsensical mix of nonsense?
I think it's a very brave choice to take Mithridatic. I'm surprised you didn't realise the heavy cavalry are just heavy cavalry right at the beginning, because that's one of the first things you realise about Mithridatic, is it doesn't have cavalry impacts. But so that was interesting. And I think you're right. It looks like it flatters to deceive. It's got all the toys, but in the wrong places. And not just your links, the army in general. So you've got phalanx, you've got impact infantry, and you've got impetuous infantry, but you've got two of each of them. And they just don't seem to work in concert together, to my knowledge. And it's just got penny packets of everything, but doesn't work. So, I mean, I think you did well to get the hang of it after the first two issues. And the other thing I'd say is the guy with the Allens, I think it's Juan Carlos, he was very unlucky against me as well. So I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, he certainly got talent for him. But I think in terms of penny packets, what I was thinking was the pikemen and the heavy foot and the heavy spearmen. You know, you've actually got a block of five in that first command. One spearman, two Galatians, two phalanx. And then in the other one, you've got one spearman, two legions, one phalanx and two Thracians. So you're almost at six there, with the bowmen doing a little bit of stuff. And then two cataphracts makes first command from five to seven. Cavalry makes the other one to seven. So you're sort of 14 across with stuff that is reasonably happy to fight anything. And I think the thing I found was that bit about you've never got enough stuff in the right place. But there's always something stood next to it that's perfect. So it's a bit of a challenge, but it's a bit draws the opponent in to have a go. And then they realize, oh, there's some nasty stuff there. Gordon,
I'm nodding because when I've tried to wait, I mean, I like these toolkit armies because there is the perfect tool if only your opponent will give you one turn's grace whilst you maneuver to bring it to the front to say, excuse me, I've got the guys here. We're ready for a fight in a moment, but don't charge yet. But because there's not a massive number of, say, pike in one place, there's no particular thing to avoid. And I think that perhaps its secret weapon is that people underestimate that it's got a lot of good stuff because you can't see it all at once. You don't realize it's actually quite dangerous if you attack it. You think, oh, well, if I avoid the pikemen, that's it. And then you realize actually it's a choice between several bad options. All of these things are quite difficult to fight.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's reasonable. And also you've got to sort of take a bit of a risk. It's like someone comes at you with cataphracts. You're like, well, I'd love them to fight the pike, but I don't really want them to fight the Galatians. But the Galatians are elite and they're stood next to pikemen. So if the pikemen win before the Galatians die, you suddenly start getting benefits. So it was an army designed to take a lot of casualties in the process of winning. And it did that in pretty much every game.
To me, Tim, it's very continental in its look, and I mean that from having played a, you know, I've played nowhere near.
Here we go.
You've got that ability effectively where you've got two commands that are mini armies in their own right, and that is, from my experience, I've seen that in Portugal, you know, against the in Lisbon in the teams, and I saw it in Alicante last year. It's a very different way of playing the game. I think you guys who've had a lot of exposure to the continental players, the central London guys, for some of us out here in the sticks in Bristol, for example, it's very different. You know, I think we've tended to play by lumping our cavalry together. So infantry in one command, cavalry in either wings, etc. And that sort of mini army in a command should, in theory, as Gordon's saying, give you all the tools you need. The question I would ask was, how much practice did you have before you used it?
Oh, desperately not enough. I had one game which I lost, which I got absolutely crushed in. And then I got crushed in the first two as well.
And you're getting better as you're moving forward with it. And I think this is one of those armies, a bit like the latest Seleucid, where it looks great, but you've got to play with it a lot to make it, to really get it ingrained into, you know, sort of a pattern of use, if you like. But no, I like it. I think it's just a shame that its original owner was never quite as successful as he would have liked to have been.
I guess so. And Simon, you crushed it in the practice game, didn't you? With your
So you and I had a practice game where I brought my Warring States on, and you did all the right things. We locked the train down. We got all things lined up. I think the dice gods, to some degree, were against you. And when the first line of combat came charging in, I think you lost just about every combat across the board.
And so we looked at him. Familiar.
Yeah, so no, that doesn't bode well. I managed to avoid your side of chariots for quite a while, which is always enjoyable, being a mad chariot player myself.
And then they do nothing at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. But looking at the style of design for this is very European. So I've seen Rafa and Hubert, they do this style of army, which for me, I'm more like Mark. I just look at this and I can't get my head around how to use a bit of this and a bit of that. I'm more of a, here's a block of impetuous swordsman or whatever, and then you can work around it. So
I think that theory that it's very complicated was possibly where I went wrong in the earlier games, by trying to use it in a complicated way. And I think when I started to work it out, it was actually, right, you just got to take the rough with the smooth. And that first command was a block of one spearman, two Galatians, two pikemen. And if they're not got good matchups, doesn't matter. They're fighting whatever's in front of them. And then it was two cataphracts. So actually, it was a brilliant general commanding five infantry and two cataphracts. And then
I think where Mark is right is that you need a bit of practice when you get to the deployment after you've got the terrain.
Yeah.
It's not quite what you're aiming for, but you've got something else. Yeah. Is what order do I, horizontally, do I spread out these various troop types in? Because then you are right in that, well, they're the ones who are going to fight whatever's in front of them. It's too late to change anything. The one point at which you can determine your future is when you tell people where to stand and then start walking forward.
Yeah, where do you stick the cataphracts, on the left or the right or in the middle? In some ways, because you've got two big blocks of infantry and two cataphracts, because the cavalry, the one light horse in the command goes on one flank and the other cavalry goes on another, and you're trying to refuse it. But it is where I got it wrong was where I tried to use it in a complicated way and actually over-engineer trying to get the right troops into the right matchup, and there aren't enough of them to make it worth doing that. Having a solid line and just taking the lumps was it, really.
You beat me to what I can say, because you've got a high command, you've got two brilliant generals in the micro commands, you put down the micro command, and then you tend to think, oh, now I can start re-maneuvering the army to get my toys to the right position. And it's very easy to end up in a traffic jam of your own making.
Yeah. Well, you'll see that in some of the videos, because I'm doing video reports for it. So you'll definitely see it, you know. But at least these Galatian guys, there's no manoeuvring with them. They're just going straight forward, and then everything kind of gets tied to them and behind it. So the world's most complicated list. That the secret, I think, is to use it like you're an idiot, and sort of staple your hands to the table and not try and do anything clever at all.
And was there anything that you wish you'd bought or not bought, Tim?
Yeah,
to go with
well,
it.
I always sounds ridiculous. I struggled to use that light cavalry javelin and the heavy cavalry properly on that second command. They were sort of either there was terrain there or there was a they were sort of a backstop or they just came in to sort of fill gaps, and they ended up roaming around the back of the army in a way and just stopping people who were getting around your flank from getting to the baggage. Yeah. Apart from one game where I accidentally charged someone and they ran towards my baggage and captured it, but that's a different story. And I just wonder whether, you know, you're only allowed two cavalry and you're only allowed two of them to be elite and two cataphracts, and whether having both the cataphracts elite would have been better. I don't know, and just leave the other. But it was, you know, it's a tricky one. And I ended up basically sticking two big blocks of infantry in and shoving them forwards. Maybe having a javelin man, but I only came up against one elephant. So we just about managed to deal with that okay. So it was just so bitty. It's hard to see what I would do. You kind of feel there was stuff that you wanted to change, but I don't think there were options to do it, because there are only four cavalry, two of which can be cataphracts, and or two cataphracts, two cavalry. This is the whole bloody list, really, that you've got there. There's nothing I'm missing. You know, you can't stick anything else extra in, really. That's kind of it. So yeah, that was kind of the set of it. So look, let's see what's next. That was the Thracians finishing it up. This means war. This means war. So who have we got now? We've got Gordon, and looks like you're in action there against
me,
Rafa.
Losing to Rafa, yeah.
Well, we've all got pictures of ourselves losing to Rafa.
Look at the table closest to the camera, and you can see the exchange of units.
Yeah.
Yes, you can, can't you? Yeah, yeah. And yours are all on bigger bases, but there's
not
quite
Rafa. I certainly did. Gordon did, obviously.
Yeah. No, I never got to the heady heights of playing him after losing my first two.
No.
And I mean, although we'll get onto the individual reasons why I chose the army, one thing I say before you get onto that is Rafa completely floored me by his army choice, because he did the opposite of what Mark has referred to as the kind of continental brigading system, where you have quite complex mini armies as core. He had absolutely simplistic army design. Wow. He had two identical corps of average armored heavy light chariots, and then a combined corps of the elite light chariots and some foot, which included LMI bowmen. The exact opposite of what we learned the hard way, say, eight or 9 years ago, when we, as a club, went to Charleroi. With our very simple organization of here's the medium foot command, here's the heavy foot command, here's the mounted. And all got trounced on the first day.
Let's have a look at repeating it. So let's the cycle has gone full cycle. So let's have a look at your is that a sacred camp?
Yes, I thought if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go the full Monty and
do
have a
big
camp.
And this is ancient British, and it's Phil Barker's ancient British Panzer Division.
It is. It's led by Cassivellaunus, who allegedly did have an army that was mainly chariots for a short while, whilst they were retreating in the face of a Roman army.
And you've got him, the strategist. So this is another one with very low command, so a strategist soaks it all up. So you've got a 14, a 7, and a 6. And the 6 and the 7 are basically four or five chariots and a couple of light horse javelins. So they're identical and they're both included. And then you've got a bigger command, which is light chariots javelin, the same, with three impetuous warriors and five light infantry. So there must have been a theory here, because that's, you know, I've used this army, but that looks unusual as a design. So there must have been a theory.
The theory was that the two smaller commands kind of write themselves, is how many people can you, or how many chariots can you give to an included ordinary general and expect him to control them? And I think the maximum is about 5. 4 is probably better. I want the 2 light cavalry available because often they're better at shooting because they've got, you know, better protection than the chariots themselves. Mm-hmm. You just need them to protect the flanks as well. That if I went for the entirely mounted version, that meant that the strategist would have to look after all the other chariots. And I thought it was too much. So I decided
there's a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, there were 2 other ancient British armies there, both with Cassivellaunus, not the real Cassivellaunus. It turned out that was me, because I fought them all. And they went for the entirely mounted version. So no warriors on foot, no light infantry. That gave them only 24 units in all, as opposed to 28. And wherever there's terrain, you know, our chariots simply can't go into it. It's not that we're slowed down to it. We're not allowed into it. You know, yeah. Our light chariots go at 1 in rough terrain. We can't even enter difficult terrain, which I suppose is fair enough. So in most games, the warriors did get into a fight, even if it was against the mounted, and sometimes cataphracts. But they paid their way, and having lots of light infantry, meant that I could hold a piece of mountain or something with a couple of guys, and that would soak up part of the width of the table. Because in general, I wanted an empty table, but there would always be somewhere where the pedestrians could aim for. Okay. That was the theory. And that is about as far as the theory goes, other than I wanted to play with this because I've used it before and really enjoyed it. But that was in a much more tightly themed competition at Campaign a couple of years ago, where all they were facing was Romans and successor states and things like that.
Yeah.
Where there was no real bowmen. And that's the thing that really kills this army. It's very, very vulnerable to shooting. What initially scared me about Rafa's army was just those couple of bowmen protected by impact medium foot. I should have just charged the lot of them as a priority and not even tried to send the other 2 commands in anywhere near his chariots until I had got those bowmen either dead or just tied up in combat.
Yeah. And 3 medium swordsmen impetuous is an interesting number. Is that, was there a reason? Because it feels like to me there should be 4, 5, or 6 or none.
No, I was working backwards from I can have 8 elite chariots. I'd have liked more. I'll put up with having slightly fewer not elite ones, but I don't want to be outnumbered by the non-elite ones because they are a real arrow magnet. And so the leftover money, I thought, well, it'd be good to have some terrain troops, and 3 is enough to be either contesting a wood or a plantation, or just to be bait. And taking them somewhere near the sacred camp, in theory, this did not work in practice, in theory, it would allow me to know where my opponent was going to put their major effort.
Okay.
Fall apart in practice.
Yeah, Dave, you've been...
People couldn't believe it was going to be that straightforward to go and loot the...
Dave, you've been making puzzled noises in the background in your bunker there. What's your thoughts on this?
I think it's a really interesting army. Again, it's the fashion of the moment. It's very large and it's got a strategist. And it's got, the smaller commands with included generals, which it's got all the right things. I don't see where it could go wrong. Having smashed my army completely to pieces, taking 98 points out of 100 off me in practice, which was a bit of a shocker. I think Gordon's right. He needs to crack into Rapper's army and things like that when he's got the opportunity with his chariots and that.
Well, I can tell you what went wrong
it's army of medium cavalry at the end of the day, isn't it? And it is very vulnerable to shooting.
Yeah, it's even in the biblical period, this is an old-fashioned army.
Yes.
It's at the very beginning of warfare, and everybody else gave up on it very soon The Britons were the last people to do so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
the things that kill it, and there are many things that kill it, include massed camels. That was my second game.
Mm.
So, armored shooty cavalry, that was the first game, all of those armored cabs of light chariots. And my third loss was to Hittites, which I shouldn't really have lost to. It was my own fault for trying to do a complicated redeployment and not doing it fast enough because I didn't have the command pips when I started doing it. I should simply have gone forward and shot. And the reason I should have shot is that in my later games, when I did do that more determinedly, you can pump out an enormous firepower with this army. In my last game, I've got the figures because my opponent was so floored by them, he took a picture and counted them. So I took a picture as well. In my second turn, I did, just when I opened fire, I did 11 shooting hits against another ancient British army and only took 7, I think, in return. That's only half seven. Army in one round of fire. And the game ended on the beginning of the fourth turn. There was nobody left on the other side to fight.
Wow. Wowee. God. Mark, did you fancy fighting
I think it's an extremely brave army to take, but I think in your point, Gordon, is I think you therefore have to be brave with it. The problem with the javelins, of course, is you've got to get within that distance, that very close distance. So you're committed because to evade would be extremely dangerous. I'm intrigued by the sacred camp. I could see you using it as bait, but it's quite expensive bait, surely, Gordon. But
people can't believe I'd be that stupid. That's why I do it.
And I fully understand.
And 28 is 28. You can still almost afford to take the 6 losses if it gets captured, can't you?
I find the list slightly odd in the fact that probably there should be on the terrain side of things, you should be allowed mountains, but not that you'd probably want it, Gordon, because I think there were some of these light chariot British armies trundling around, at least in steep hills, put it that way. Did you buy all the light foot? I can't remember from the list off the top of my head.
No, I think I could probably have more. I think you can have quite a lot of slingers. It might be enough.
Yeah.
I took a majority of javelin ones because I thought they're going to go in front of a small number of warriors who want to get into a fight. Therefore, we want to drive off anybody who's shooting at us just before the fight starts. Or we can hold a piece of terrain on our own.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to have no slingers because there are only ranged fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. But I think it's a good army. As you say, it's a good army to do one of those things where, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, it's almost a sort of niche army if you hit the right thing at the right time. And I'm assuming Raffa was using the New Kingdom Egyptian?
New Kingdom Egyptian. So he had 12 armoured chariots.
Yeah, that's got to be tough for you. Absolutely. It shoots further. It's got better armour than you. It fights better. Well, it fights at least as good as you do, put it that way. So, yeah.
Yep.
No, that's pretty pokey. Simon, what is there something you'd ever dare use?
Well, I was very tempted to bring the same army. So, but mine, because I don't have enough chariots, wouldn't have been the full mad chariot option. When I designed mine, I think mine was about 32 elements because I'd gone for more of the medium swordsman and just, I was basically trying to go for drunken Brits on tour in Spain type of concept. Is that here's all this impetuous, but I think for me where I struggle with this was I kept on thinking light chariot javelin would give me a bonus in the impact phase, and after Mr. Saunders tore me to pieces with it and reminded me, no Simon, you shoot and run, it was like I was really impressed to see this running around, and the amount of firepower he can put out is quite impressive. So, well done, you Gordon, for bringing it. I thought it was quite an interesting choice.
I'd also add to that there were at least two other people in the competition who thought the same way as Gordon.
Yeah, so, and in a more pure way because they didn't bring any pedestrians at all.
Yeah, so it's
that Phil Barker obsession, isn't it? the ancient British Panzer Division has a as an iconic resonance within the world of wargaming. I must say, I used it years and years ago under version 3 in a one-day competition that was really tightly themed, and as you say, almost no bowmen in a kind of classical period, and very few cavalry as well. So in that really limited context, it's an enormous medium cavalry army that also shoots. That's a new thing in version. Is that a new thing in version 4? Or is it? No, maybe in version 3 as well.
It wasn't there in version 3, but in version 4, it's been made more powerful.
And I think I found it was a case of you had to, you couldn't get close to someone to shoot. So you almost were evading from two or three away for a couple of turns, and people were chasing you out of position across the table. And then you were just throwing everything back in when they'd started to just give up some flanks and things like that. And it just was the sheer numbers. I'm just trying to remember whether I did include any infantry or not. I think I own 16 chariots, so it's how many you can do with six. That probably means you have to have some infantry. But yeah. I found it great fun, but I think my opponents found it desperately terrible because they were all plodding along with infantry and they couldn't catch it, and it was just a miserable experience for them. Which
I mean, you if you're facing infantry, yes, you go up close and you can shoot and you can evade fairly safely. Against cavalry, never evade. There's no point. But no. I mean, a relatively slow-moving opponent like Kushans, a combination of going close enough to shoot, evading, and some bits of it just waiting until the flanks open, allowed me to take down the cataphracts and the elephants. Not that many losses.
Did you dismount any of these guys?
I dismounted two chariots against the Kushans, so I had one elite javelinman who single-handedly did kill an elephant.
That's good. That's fantastic. Well, I think it's certainly the bravest army here, even if it wasn't necessarily the most successful, and certainly one of the most colourful as well. So big kudos for taking Cassibelanus. And I think that probably brings us up to the Mad Axeman podcast's first ever commercial break.
Hello, I'm Ron McHugh, head of the northern arm of the McHugh Global Carpet Empire, and I'm here because I've heard some very disturbing news. It's come to my attention that some foreign chap by the name of Wargamer's Whims has been selling ADLG battle mats in, I dare say, metric sizes. This has to stop. We at the McHughs are the European sole empire that controls the distribution of carpets. And given battle mats are essentially very small carpets, this is an area we think we should continue to be in control of. So, if you want your ADLG mat, no matter how big it is or how small it is, in Axminster, Shagpile, or any other form of medium density weave, we're the people you should be coming to. So, don't forget, as we say here in the McHugh Empire for Carpets, whatever you want to do, there's a McHugh for you. You can't go far wrong if you stick with a Don. So, turn your back on Wargamer's Whims. Don't buy any of this funny foreign muck. And we'll see you over at table on a McHugh carpet. Thanks for listening.
Well, look, after that slightly disturbing commercial break, we're on to another set of army lists, and here's Mr. Saunders in action in your first game. And that looks like a proper Rafa mat. I think the Northern McHughes will have words with you on that one. The Rafa road straight through, some Rafa terrain. It's just a full set of McHugh baiting terrain types there. But Dave, you were taking bravely the legendary Aztecs of the water possum, and it's another 27, my God. And I'm not even going to start trying to read these names out. You can do it, but there's a 14, a 9, and a 4, and a strategist and a brilliant, and an ordinary included. So try and describe this in less than a couple of hours and without spitting all over your microphone when you try and pronounce the names.
Okay, so the theory was, this competition was probably one of the only competitions I could probably use Aztecs without getting completely trounced, although I had no expectation of not getting trounced. Practice was disastrous, so I just thought, we'll go and take it and see what it does. And then it kind of did quite well. So the theory of it is that anything on mounted is going to kill me. And that happens in one game where I got absolutely destroyed by, I can't remember his name, Pablo Juarez. He had two included impact heavy cavalry generals, which is almost a quick kill on anything that I throw at it. So the objective there was just to throw one sacrifice at anything like cataphracts or heavy cavalry or anything like that, one at a time. So they just occupy them when you got around the back with the command structure, because you got the strategy stand, the brilliant. Number of times the brilliant general threw ones, letting me down, was a bit disappointing. So yeah, the objective is put down command three first, the small command, or use that as an in a ambush or a flank march if we really are desperate. The other point is high command, as you can have, having four, was to try and win the initiative, defend in planes and put down five pieces of terrain. Number of times that didn't work because everybody else had strategists and had high command. And also the number of times I put down five pieces of terrain and someone, you're obviously guaranteed someone's going to roll a six against you and remove one of them and push it out to the side of the terrain. It worked surprisingly well, I think, because I think I can get 10 elite impact and impetuous troops into the army. Yeah. So, you know, if you can concentrate them. It didn't work against Rafa's heavy cavalry bow army with armor, and it didn't work against Pablo's heavy cavalry impact army. But the other ones I won, which was a deeply shocking result, I tell you.
So, because I think, you know, clearly it's all got the word medium there. Yes. And the bowmen are mediums, and the lights are just lights. So is there four of us here going, how do you actually step out of terrain with this? Against anything with four legs, or did you just not fight that many things with four legs?
Well, terrain-wise, I put down two fields, two plantations, in a hill with a field on it.
You went all five and moved.
Where I had, because I can put down three ambushes in theory. So if I could get the plantations across the table, then I was using ambushes against the guy with the Allens. I put ambushes in the middle of the table. And he rode up and I just pinned him from the side and just split him all up because he was just stuck. And the idea is just using one guy to go up and pin two of the enemy whilst everybody tries to run around the back of them, if that makes sense. And there is a fair amount. So the medium sword atlatl are just one at a time going up to die against cavalry and things like that whilst the rest try to get around the flanks, which did work. I mean, it's actually really difficult to play with and actually really good fun once you get the hang of it. So, you know, at one point I killed a heavy cavalry impact elite general by offering him something to kill, then running around the side of him, shooting him with getting one hit on him, then hitting him in the flanks. So you can do it. It's good, yeah. But it didn't lost to Rafa and it lost to Pablo Suarez, who are good players. Who had cavalry armies, but you know, that was his weakness.
Gordon, you're leaning forward puzzledly, or are you just trying to work out if there is a meaningful question to ask about this sort of thing?
Well, it came as a great surprise to me that he did so well with it, because we did have two practice games, out of which I learned nothing other than Aztecs are simply speed bumps in front of chariots.
Yeah.
But I mean, one thing I it's not so much about this list, but I think there is a stronger list. The Tex Callan list would be even better than this in terms of its shooting power and still having many of the same kinds of troops. But the shooting power is considerable. People can't ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, there's an awful lot of people come with an atlatl. And if an opponent doesn't attack you, maybe in not the numbers they wanted to and in the ideal place, they can't just stand there. They either retreat or they get shot to pieces.
Mm. Yeah, so Dave, did you find it was shooting that eroded them, or was it the impact, impetuous foot that they just didn't wash over or they came against the right opponents? Because, yeah, there's... I'm looking four atlatl, five atlatl, six, seven bowmen, eight, nine, 10 sling, another 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 or 18 shooters, which is an army for some people.
It, it lost to Rafa because Rafa, I mean, my initiative was 4, his was 2. He won the initiative and defended in the desert, which deprived me of the terrain to work with. So I just had to line up and then he outshot me because I had to put my impact troops in front of his chariots because that's the only thing which can stand up to the chariot in a contact. And I didn't manage to get around for that. You just have to offer up one of the medium sword atlatl to, you know, you put one of those in front of 4 cataphracts and it's kind of stuck on them. And the cataphracts will come forward and kill that. But meanwhile, you can probably maneuver past him and be shooting the one on the end, if that makes sense.
I mean, to me, Dave, having played not a similar army, but I played another Aztec, my fear was being swamped. And I know I had the same breakpoint, that's fine, but it's so manoeuvrable. It moves at 3. As Tim's point about the shooting, the change from V3 to V4 with the atlatl, giving it the same range as the bow, but you no effect in sort of combat, if you like, I think is quite significant. So that extra, you know, 1 UD of range really just turns the entire army into short range bowmen. So I think it's a really interesting army. I think again, you know, the ability to move this almost in mini army blocks, I think would be quite interesting as well. And so that you can do that thing of getting round the flanks and into the rears. The guy that I played with the Aztec, as I say, just lined up and basically fought all my heavy impetuous swordsmen and my heavy cavalry frontally. So it was an almost foregone conclusion. But I did take a lot of casualties getting in. Virtually every one of my warband foot had a casualty before it got to combat with the medium swordsmen. And they are swordsmen, so they do get that +1, and they do stop impetuous foot in particular from having their ferocious charge. So I think it's you underestimate this army at your peril.
Yeah, how far do atlatl shoot, Dave? I
shoot 2 now, which is really much better than the 1 they were originally.
Yeah.
So 2. Is it 2?
No. Yes. Well, I mean, okay, not 4. Yeah. With everybody with an atlatl, which is more or less, it's the same size, but it's everybody with an atlatl. And he's won 28mm competitions with it. I don't think that works in this competition. I needed the impact to stand in the open against cavalry. Because, you know, if it's heavy cavalry bow, I'm shooting the same distance as them. But you split it up into penny packets. You know, you offer one atlatl guy out into the front of the line, like much as you would, you put a light horse in front of pike and run, you know, that sort of thing. And then you're just manoeuvring 2 of each and 2 of each. The difficulty is when you run out of pips occasionally, you know, if the brilliant throws a 1 or the strategist throws a 1, you can get in a bit of a headache. And the other option is you can concentrate 10 elite impact and impetuous together if you've got the right opportunity.
Yeah, which I guess in the Mithridatic army would be exactly the right opportunity for that. Yeah. That would be perfect. A good job.
I will be using it a lot more. Now I've known how to use it, I'm amazed at how much fun it was. Amazed at it.
Yeah, because you really were in suspicion of thinking that you were going to be just playing it so people went, oh, they look colourful, and slipping down the table. But it's 27. It's a lot of shooting. Simon, did you play a practice game against it?
No, I don't think I played against the Aztecs. I played against one of his other mad armies.
We played the Aztecs against your ancient British, didn't we?
Oh, did we? Okay, yep. It's quite impressive. And one thing I've learned, because I got rolled over by another similar army, one of these all medium swordsman ones, you think in the open you can get it, but if you can get some decent terrain, one of my opponents had a very similar army, and he pushed 2 commands down the flank because it was like forest and all that. And within 3 or 4 turns, you've got a medium swordsman command in your flank that you then have to deal with. So with the right terrain, the Aztec armies are very, very terrifying. Well done you for bringing it. Very gutsy. But looking at it, I can see in the right theme, this will be a great, great army. If you run against the wrong opponent, it's going to be a very, very quick and violent game.
Yeah. Is it wrong opponent, or is it wrong terrain and wrong opponent? Does it, do you need both of those things before you, you really start to worry?
Against Rafa, you know, with his initiative was 2, mine was 4. I should win the initiative and be able to defend in the plains. He won the initiative, defended in the desert, knowing full well what I would have. Yeah. If it had been the other way around, I think I could have rolled over at
that. Yeah.
It made squish it very, you
know? I think it's interesting putting down 5 bits of terrain, because that's when I've got a strategist, that's always the debate. Do you put down 4 and move 2?
Yes.
Or do you just go all in and put 5?
But you still get to move 1.
You still get to move 1. So you were going 5.
Yes. But as I say, the number of times somebody went, oh, I've rolled a 6 and taken 1 off. But that's just...
I think with a very large medium swordsman army, you need to put down as much terrain possible to really block up those big... Say, like for your army, here's 14 wide, or Mark's army, here's 14 wide of scariness. By blocking that all up, the medium swordsman will be able to hide and pop out and annoy people and all that far more effectively.
I'm trying to put a plantation in the outer section, but on your half of the table where you can put an ambush almost up to halfway across the table to then mess people around by putting the medium sword atlatl in there just to pop out, pin things from the side and just...
Mm.
You want to split your opponent up so you can deal with them in penny. Yeah.
Mm. And of course, they look scarily cool. Okay.
Yeah. Well, look, it's also an incredibly pretty army, Dave, isn't it?
That's not my figures, unfortunately.
I know.
They're not bad for it.
It's still a pretty army.
It is a very pretty army and fun to play with. I mean, watch out, it'll probably go to roll call. I'm saying that.
Okay. All right. That's good then. Fantastic stuff. This means war. So then we're here rolling through this list with a video segment of Mr. Allen, and Mr. Allen's tremendous shirt. And because this is a pre-record, he's not going to be able to comment. So I'm wondering if maybe we should have a round table on the quality of his sartorial elegance here with that shirt. Anybody got any views to offer on it?
I think it's camouflage, isn't it? It's some sort of camouflage to confuse the opponent.
Yes, I suggested it could be.
He doesn't go shopping himself, you know. It's his sons buy this.
Oh, right. Because they think it's cool, or just because they think it's funny?
They are very up on what is cool and what is a really expensive short run of designer stuff from Japan, and will queue outside pop-up shops to buy the latest cool stuff and then flog it on to their mates. Cast-offs, go to Dave.
Yeah.
They're like bathing ape.
All right, so it's Dave's cast-offs then. Fine.
I just thought this shirt here with all the skulls and all that should have gone to Mr. Saunders, bringing the Aztecs and their penchant for skulls and all that.
That would have worked, wouldn't it? Yeah. And there's Dave playing on a pretty empty table with, you've just seen the preview there, with his Ostrogoths, which just to quickly run through the list, we'll run through the list in a minute anyway, with Dave providing our audio and works successfully. So let's give that a go, see how this all works. Right, well, we've got a special guest beamed in here on a prior recorded segment. It's like we're on the One Show, but I'm not Alex Jones, and I don't think you are Dave Allen either. You're not that ex-footballer, are you?
Not that I've noticed, no.
Not that you've noticed, no, but you do look very sporting there and fit and healthy. Possibly not in this thing. I think that's a deceptive shirt. And this is a shot from your first game, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it was against Eduardo,
Eduardo, good stuff. Excellent. So we're going to quickly talk about your army, and then we're going to go back to the studio guests and see what they're actually looking at as well. So you chose the fairly unusual Ostrogoths, which to me kind of says super hairy and lots of chargy stuff, but it's not quite, it's pretty chargy, to be fair. What was your thinking? I know we talked in the car that you were saying Alicante's quite a hard, tiring competition with a lot of games on a day, so a few decisions is kind of good. But just talk us through the commands from how you use them.
Well, okay, command 1 is the, let's have a look, I've got it here. For some reason now I can't go back up to full screen. I don't know, it's me. Command 1 was intended to be a sort of solid flanking command. So with the Huns speeding the Huns, yeah, around the flank under the strategist, and the horsemen, I can either charge in or I can maneuver with them because I've got the strategist. And that was all the thinking that was involved there, really. Oh, and the two bowmen.
The two bowmen.
Yeah, he can sort of drop them into any bit of terrain or slightly behind the main line and snipe away at things.
Okay, so their filler, their reserves, their terrain troops, and you've got nine elite troops in that command, which is pretty chunky as well.
Yeah, I like elite troops there.
Yeah.
Saves me a lot of trouble with the dice.
And then this second one is a fascinating command because you've got four heavy swordsmen impetuous, which is a nice solid infantry block, can take on infantry, they're dangerous. And then you've given them an ordinary included mounted impetuous general, which to me, the red light of you're insane, is this a mistake, is flashing, but clearly you ended up doing better than I did. So that kind of, maybe it wasn't. How on earth did that work?
Well, the intention was obviously to slap that in the centre and have the warriors speeding forward, covered by the light infantry bow to avoid shooting, and having the general hanging back to be...
sort of like, fire brigade or something.
A guard. Yeah.
Yeah. Did that work?
No, not at all.
All right. Okay. Reasonable.
It was awful because I ended up doing was having quite frequently a village on a hill.
Yeah.
And putting the light infantry into it, and then never having enough points to actually really move the warriors.
Oh right. Okay. So it basically ended up a padding command.
Nine
extra stuff to make the other 17 harder to kill. Wow. Okay. So did people attack it? Did it get into the game?
Well, twice people attacked up the hill into my light infantry.
Yeah.
In the village and paid the penalty.
Yeah, that doesn't work at all, does it?
Quite a substantial one, really.
So this would almost be on the opposite flank to the big stretches command then, perhaps. But you said you were trying to put it down the middle, which is hard to...
The intention was to put it down the middle, and obviously I didn't think it through.
Right, okay, so you thought you put it down the middle, you ended up putting it on the flank with the village, to just widen the terrain, narrow the table, okay. And then you've got a very tiny two impetuous cavalry and two light infantry bow command as well, which just really puts, so you're actually five, six, you're kind of almost seven, eight impetuous horsemen, of which seven are elite, eight are elite if you count that one in the middle command.
It did me proud because it never rolled a one.
Oh right, okay, there they go, charging away. Okay, so it's unreliable as well, to say including unreliable minus six, making that a 24 point command with 30 points of troops in it. Okay, so what, because this looks pretty unsubtle, and it looks like something that if you came up against solid foot, you'd sort of have to charge into them in a way and take your lump. So what was the secret that won it for the Dave? How did it work in practice?
The Ostrogoth horsemen are surprisingly resilient. They're tough to kill, and you're killing 11 points, but you're only killing one unit out of 26.
Yeah,
I had a fortified camp as well.
Oh, okay, fortified camp, right? Okay,
nobody ever came near the camp anyway.
Yeah,
it's a big army. It is actually.
Yeah, 26 is chunky, isn't it? With 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 proper combat troops, and then the bowmen.
Yeah.
So was this terrain dependent? Do you need to be going down a bowling alley for this, or were you able to? How did you deal with terrain?
I wanted by and large open terrain. I wanted to be able to get the Huns out on a flank and run around people. And it's a period when there isn't much serious heavy foot.
Yeah.
There would have been Chinese. Would have been tough, but they were Chinese that were.
They had a lot of toys, didn't they?
A lot of chariots. I think that was the first. Yeah. Game I played.
Yeah.
Or was it the Hittites I played first game? I can't remember now. I think it was the Hittites.
Right, have a look. Maybe have a look.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so what are you putting down? Are you trying to put down a coast to anchor a coasting village a lot of the time?
I decided initially first two games I didn't bother with the coast, but the final four I did. And also because I chose, I won every initiative role, which was
ridiculous. Right, okay. So you're down their throats before they can react and you're deploying second and...
No, I'm defending.
Oh, you defended?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ah.
To
sweep the terrain out of the way.
Yeah. Because of the strategist, I can get rid of terrain much more easily. And also because it gives me the opportunity to have the village on a hill.
Yeah.
So by and large, that was my thinking. Yeah.
So did you end up almost deploying the same in every game? You know, would it be Ostrogoth, the two horsemen first, then the infantry next to the village on the hill, then the big command?
Yes. Yeah, essentially that, yeah.
Yeah, so you put almost nothing out then. Okay, all right. So just very, very quickly, do you remember what you won four, drew one, lost one, I think? Yeah. Which is not... What turned you over? What was the problem?
A much better player, actually.
Oh, well.
I turned me over. I think it was Meroitic Kushite.
Okay.
And it was equally big.
Yeah.
And had lots of nasty things in it.
Right.
You know, so a lot of shooting, as I recall, heavy infantry, elephants, and everything's coming round and messing my flanks up and the rest of it. And in the end,
these guys couldn't do the business against it. They were just struggling. Okay. So would you use this again in what sort of theme would you use it in?
If there was a similar theme again, I would use it, but I would take the Huns and I'd swap them with the warriors on foot and the light infantry bow.
Okay. So you'd have the CNC commanding the warriors on foot and the bulk cavalry, and you'd stick the light horse on just on a flank on their own.
Yeah. And I'd drop one warrior foot.
Yeah.
And upgrade that medium cavalry to heavy.
Okay.
Make the unreliable general reliable.
Yeah. You can't get lucky again six times in a row.
Yeah, and separate the other one from his unit, so he's no longer included.
So actually, normally when we do this, maybe you've listened to some of them before. Normally, the people aren't going, "Yes, I'd make an enormous number of changes," unless they finish towards the bottom. So, but you seem to finish towards the top, and you're still saying, "Yeah, I could improve this a lot. It was awful," which is interesting.
It was really mind-numbingly difficult to actually get those warriors to do anything.
Yeah. Okay.
In the final game, I actually managed to march them to the other flank, and then never had the pips to move them.
Right.
and
that's just all about the horsemen.
My opponent decided to attack them. So.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, look, I think that's a nice summary. Interesting to see how it all panned out. Nice to see that you would definitely make some changes to that list as well, because it does look a bit bonkers on the face of it. So I think now we'll go back to the panel of experts in the studio, cut out our very first ever pre-recorded link on this podcast, and thank you for sharing that with us, Dave. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, and I'll see you.
See you shortly.
In Athens. Yeah.
In Athens.
Well, there we go, Mr. Allen.
First of all, it's amazing what you can do with ChatGPT.
It's bonkers. He's not a real person. We've invented it just for the purpose of this. And here we are with the self-admitted nonsense worst list that also seemed to do better than the rest of us. Mark, you're the one who had the closest to this, and you're sat there shaking your head.
It's almost the mirror opposite of mine. So where I've got sort of 10 heavy foot, Dave's got four, and where Dave's got 10 heavy cavalry, I've got, it's the reverse. I think it's an incredibly brave army. I'm being polite about it. I think had he come up against a wall of spearmen looking at the Meriotic Kushite briefly, I think that's what you may have come across is that combination of spear, elephant and bow, which will be his nemesis. I mean, if it worked, it's one of those armies, if the dice is with you and this lot hits you and your dice is not with you, if you see what I mean, as the enemy, he's going to blow you to shreds. So, But yeah, I mean, I think these kind of warband armies do need their fortified camp. It just gives you that freedom to not worry. And I know there are different views about that, but no, I mean, hats off today. I think he did brilliantly with what was actually, a handicap list in the nicest way.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Gordon, you're nodding as well. It's
Oh, yeah, because I mean, I talked to Dave before he submitted the list, and there was actually a worse version of this.
Really? How did he do that?
I can't remember what was worse about it, but it was worse before he made some changes. But I'm surprised he made so few changes. And I guess one of the values of a list like this is that people think, right, Ostrogoths, right, I know what they've got. So it'll have a massive, there'll be six heavy foot in the center. One of the wings will have loads of elite cavalry, the other will have fewer.
Yeah.
And then he puts this down and it bamboozles them. It's going to throw
everybody
off
place, isn't it?
Balance unless they've watched him in the previous game. So
that's with that shirt, you just wouldn't, would you? You wouldn't.
Oh, and you may be
blind. Well clear.
Sitting opposite the shirt as well.
He's already taken
point
it apart
about if you get it all into combat, and because it's mounted you're much more likely to and the dice are with you, it will go through most things. You didn't need finesse to do that, you needed luck, and if you've got enough luck this will do an awful lot of damage to your opponent, probably more than they can recover from.
Simon, is this got enough hairy aggression to even tempt you as a list, or is it just so weird that you're like you're struggling to see where the proper list is in this one?
But I look at this and just, especially in the period, just look at this and think because I was looking at a lot of the choices of the armies. I was expecting more some of the Asian armies with the heavy swordsman pole arm or spearman options, which would have loved this army. It's like walk right up to and go, here you go, charge me. Bring it.
You're gone. Yeah. You're removed.
So I always find heavy cavalry impetuous quite a struggle against heavy foot, because you're basically zero on the first round against pretty much anything. And then someone will very rapidly get into your flanks and begin to tear you to pieces. But having the strategist controlling a lot of the heavy cavalry does give you the options to break off and do stuff. But somehow Dave managed to make it work, because he did quite well.
Yeah. And I must admit, I'm a big fan of having, one medium cavalry behind all the elites, because they're 4 points cheaper and there's always gaps appear to fill in. And quite often the gaps have got something a little bit damaged in them because they've been fighting five or six heavy cavalry. So I find that quite a cheap thing, but you've got to almost use it with the strategies shepherding them and then pointing them at any holes that appear. But I think the bits are there, but they're just in such a weird thing. Clearly you don't want, one horseman with a heavy cavalry impetus is just very strange. The bowmen are in sort of a command that's just going to race forward. Very, very odd. Dave, are you seeing magic in the madness here?
I think it's a perfectly feasible list. I agree that the problem is command two, with the ordinary included. Then we're trying to command a heavy cavalry and the impetuous foot.
Yeah.
That's what you mean. But
can he go in with the foot? Is he allowed to be with the foot?
It's basically, they're going to have to trundle. You're always going to have two pips, aren't you?
Yeah, you are.
And that command's job is just to trundle forward in the centre of the table.
Yeah.
Then you're finessing with the strategist and the heavy cavalry and the Huns. I think the four light cavalry Huns are really working in concert with the bowmen, which is another of my favourite things, is really useful. And one of the things noticeable that Dave said, he won the initiative in almost all his games, didn't he, said?
Yeah. Which was,
that's a big advantage if you're using an army like this.
Army.
What you're going to do. Because, if he defends and just takes three pieces of terrain, two tiny fields and a coast, or a road, a coast in a field, then he's depriving the other person of terrain and he's running down the... I think it's kind of an army that I think is the way to go. Two included generals with it, with impact forces, and then the strategist to finesse the rest of the game. I think this is the kind of... Also the size thing. This is kind of the fashion of the moment. It used to be 23 was a basic. Now it's kind of 25, 26 is getting to be a basic.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like what he was talking about with the four light infantry bow in difficult terrain. you know, that nobody's shifting them out of difficult terrain at all, are they? That's quite cute. So you flip that heavy cavalry into the last command, and suddenly there's three elite impetuous heavy cavalry, and that's pretty pokey.
A good idea to upgrade the light infantry bow to light cavalry bow so that you don't have to constantly move at half speed with your gears scraping and using up command pips.
Yeah, three cavalry and one or two Huns, yeah.
If you defend in forest, you can still have a coast in forest, I think, can you?
Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you defend in forest to put down you've got to have a forest and a coast. You've got...
Mm.
Rain, you could easily organise both your flanks on that and just bowl it, as you say, a bowling green down the centre of the table.
Just have a go. Well, it's a good, it's a very good drinking army, wasn't it? And I think we ended up having some Tarim Basin wine. This means war. Picture of some other very Australian sounding wine. Was it like G'day wine or something like that? Which inevitably brings us on to Simon Leroy Mayer. And is that the chap who played with the forgot the name of the army now? Simon, I think you're on mute. In fact, you are on mute. Old school. You're still on mute.
Right.
Simon, is that the chap with the Allens that I think several of us played?
Yeah, this was the Allens army. So I played him in the first game and he proceeded to tear me to pieces. Because as you can see, we've got a very nice open table.
And, very much so, yeah.
And there were cavalry everywhere in my flanks. And I had a micro commander of chariots who decided to stay unreliable the entire game.
Even
with the strategist going, come on, I paid for you. Come on, here's some more money. And that chariot command pretty much just sat there and smoked and had a glass of wine.
And then because this was the first game of the competition and this was the first time it happened, you lacked the discipline to say, the rest of my army's staying here. This is not going to happen to me again. So you've got to come and fight it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I knew because just where...
We've all done it.
Yeah, and I also knew that if I didn't go, because we're playing against the mounted army, within the first turn, because you saw my commander got unreliable, his arm is split in half and was trying to wrap around me. So I had to pick a fight with him as quickly as possible and hope that I could reactivate the command. But it didn't play at all.
It didn't work. Well, look, let's see the little guys then. And here they are, Warring States. The Warring States. And you've got, there is a strategist. Is that a full sweep of strategists?
Yep, I think we pretty much...
Apart from me, because obviously Mithridates wasn't that good. But he did have two brilliant. So you've got a four, which we talked about, the unreliable one, which is all good. You've got a 12 with the strategist, obviously, which is medium sword impact, heavy sword impact support. That's the block of it. Another couple of chariots. So you're eight wide of dangerous stuff, bit of supporting crossbow and a light horse. And then you've got nothing particularly mounted here. Medium sword impact, one of them, two light javelin crossbow, two impetuous. That's a make a mess in terrain, but there's got to be the right terrain sort of army with a seven there. 4, 12, 7. Strategist initiative of four, which is grand. So again, talk us through your theory on this one and how it was supposed to...
Can I make a request when you are talking us through it? Can you explain how you got it past the list checker?
How's that?
Well, you've got six impact chariots, all of them elite.
No, I've only got four.
Oh, you've only got four. All right, so I'm speeding it. Fine, good.
I think yeah, that's a good answer, isn't it?
Whew, yeah, me have good like in it.
No heckling from the back rows, Gordon.
Yeah. So, it's the first time you've been invited on this podcast, Gordon. Don't cause trouble. We're all good.
We'll report you to Javier.
Yes, indeed. No, it's a legal list. So, Simon, fire away. Tell us how it all worked.
So my thought with the Warring States is sort of use both options, the polearm version and the impact version. And I found, especially for my style of play, I'd rather go the impact option. So the whole army was designed on bring as wide as possible frontage into your face as quickly as possible. So with the initiative of four and having a strategist, a brilliant general, I can move most of the army quite aggressively. And when it actually worked, in most times I was at someone's 4UD within turn one, which is, you know, always quite impressive. And the idea was everyone's impact, most of the all the heavy swordsmen, the chariots are impact, and it's just going to be a proper, or even the meme swordsmen, the proper stodgy army. So it was here to pick a fight and go down screaming. And it did that quite well against most opponents. The two armies that tore me to pieces were, no great surprise, the Allens, and being all mounted. And I played against a gentleman, Jesus, who brought an ancient Bedouin army, which is the other army I was tempted to bring, just because I've got a bunch of newly painted up camels. And he had an army size of 30 and defended in the desert, I think it was. So I had no option but to just charge after him and see if I could break his army before he flanked me. Got very close, but when you've got, you know, 15 camels hitting your flank crumbles pretty quickly. Wow. So it was just a very simple theory. Here's a lot of impact. Okay. Walk up to someone and say, "G'day, how are you?"
Yeah, and just shove them in. So Gordon, you've used this army. I think you crushed me with something very similar.
I had one fewer chariot and I had about 60% heavy impact foot and 40% medium foot. And I didn't bring the fanatical medium sword impetuous, although it's really tempting. There's lots of things you want to get into this, but you can't have it all. And I didn't bring a strategist. I just had two brilliants and then a small command, which I think was responsible for the chariots. It's the same toys, just organized differently. I think the strategist does make it better, though, because you need to try and control what width of the table you're going to fight on. And just having two brilliants doesn't give you that control over the terrain. I think that's really quite an important thing for an army that is quite small like this, although very, very tough where it's present.
Mm. And, you know, the question I have looking at this is, how many things do you give support to? Because it's useful, but then you pay for it and then you find you never use it and all the rest of it. So what's the decision process on how many times you give support or who you give support to? Because I'm looking at this thinking the heavy sword have got impact support and the medium don't, which might be the opposite way to how I might be tempted to try it if it was me.
Yeah, it was a choice. And I thought to give the heavy swordsman the impact because the idea was the heavy chariots and the heavy swordsman would walk together as a wedge against, and I was expecting more Parthian and Persian armies with mass cataphracts. So yeah. I was expecting, what's a cataphract? So here's some chariots and here's a whole bunch of elite swordsmen with impact. So I could negate the furious charge and use the medium swordsmen to get into the flanks and all that. Didn't seem to really matter because none of my opponents had particularly scary mounted. It just tended to be a lot more of it. So support was nice, but when you're getting charged in the rear, doesn't really make a difference.
Doesn't really make any odds. Mark, is this an army that you used or fought against?
It's an army I fought against. I actually fought one in the competition at the end. We had a very close sort of one casualty within it loss to him in his favour to against me. And what he did there was he had no heavy infantry. He had all the mediums tooled up, wow. Elite, impact, plus the chariots. But he also bought the crossbow-armed cavalry, which poked a great big hole in my heavy cavalry impact and did quite well with it. I mean, to me, this is quite a threatening army because it looks to me like it's a Roman with chariots in a nicest way. You can create almost a Roman army with it, with the auxilia as the mediums and the heavy foot as the legionaries, as it were. So I think it's exceptionally dangerous. I did actually write to Javier at the beginning and said, are you going to allow this? So it's because the theme was no Romans. And I said, this is basically a Roman. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting army. I'm tempted by it. There's some lovely figures available for it. I think it's a nice... Looking at Simon's composition, my only observation for me is, it's complicated. I like to keep my commands relatively simple, but that's maybe I'm not quite as a sophisticated player as Simon.
Yeah, I've had a lot. I've had a bit of experience playing this because I play this in 25 mil. So I know Tim and I have had many a clash with his various armies and my Shin Chinese. So I think one of the best combats we ever had was what my included general in the chariot. You charged four ways, including the rear,
completely surrounded. Yeah,
and it still held on to the end of the game.
And it did. No, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, it completely crumbled.
Yeah, I think Mark, you're absolutely right. It's a sort of pseudo Roman army, and you know, my only thought looking at it is whether we talked a few times about this mixed commands versus one dimensional commands, and whether this, you know, three medium infantry and three heavy infantry, then only medium infantry and the rest of it. I would wonder whether, you know, a big block of heavy infantry and chariots is almost enough and to keep the medium swordsmen off. And is the strategist overkill? Is initiative of four almost too much for this? Because this would be quite happy defending being rough terrain troops if it had to be. And you're spending a chunk of points on it. And there's nothing other than the, you know, the impetuous swordsmen who are great novelty item and very, very tempting to take, because I've got some cool figures for them. I just wonder if it needs the command and control. But Dave, you've used this as well, haven't you? I think is this one of yours?
Similar army, but I really want to use it. I like it a lot. I think it's really good. I wouldn't use the support with the medium swordsman impacts. I would just put them through terrain. I would probably take one of the medium swordsmen out of command two and put it in command three. So you're combining up two medium sword impact elite with the fanatics. I like the fanatics. I think it's not a bad idea. I would probably try to sneak a cavalry into command three. The way I use the Romans now is I have three auxilia palatina with the two bowmen, and I put a heavy cavalry general with it, because I think one cavalryman and a light horse with medium foot stiffens them up in the open to a large degree. You can do all sorts of horrible, nasty things. If people go, oh, look, medium foot in the open and roll towards you, this cavalry can be sort of threatening the flanks and things. And it's something I like to use a lot. I think, and the other thing I would think is the heavy swordsman impact support can go through terrain. So you could actually put down quite a bit of fields, plantations and things like that. You know, then you've got options of where you put your medium swords, and I think with this is you can combine up different you're brigading things together like you do with the Romans. You can put the chariots and the heavy infantry together as one group. You can bring these things together, or you know, so you can bring the medium infantry out of the strategist command, combine it with a brilliant command, and increase your terrain troops if the terrain falls that way, or you can, you know, brigade up your heavy troops if you're in the open. I would take I put the two crossbowmen together in the strategist command and take one medium sword out of the strategist command and put it in the medium command and find a way of getting heavy cavalry in there with a light horse.
Yeah, no, I think there's all sorts of similar things that you could do, because it's, did you actually, Simon, did you find that light cavalry bow with the heavy the two heavy chariots unreliable? Did you, because that was sort of something I had as well with that, like, I mean, I just struggled to find something to do with them quite often. It looked like a great theory, but I just struggled to find something to do with them.
I found he was in, sometimes he was quite useful as like a little fighter. So once the chariot sort of part on in, especially with the chariot general, I'd try to push that forward. The light horse would run up and basically add as the cheap overlap. It was also very useful for, being that it was unreliable, chuck the light horse smack in the middle of the table as the, you know, that if he went unreliable, you had to avoid that light horse, and it does cover quite a bit of the real estate. So it gave me the opportunity of hopefully tripping somebody up, which has worked.
And I suppose if it becomes reliable, he's in the baggage. If you split your army to avoid him, he's in your baggage straight away. My kind of final question to Dave, I think you played Pablo Suarez as well. He had, in a slightly different Chinese, I mean, he had one elite medium swordsman impetuous, one impetuous unit in the command, which I thought was intriguing. I didn't quite know whether it was an expendable thing or just a cutting edge in a group of four or five medium swordsmen and spearmen or something. But it was just a very head scratching, or whether it's just it hid an ambush and you thought there was another one somewhere or whatever. Has anybody ever thought of just using one impetuous, or do you feel it needs to be two?
It was with the strategist. It was a medium sword impetuous. He had to have the pole arm, guys, and I think that was stiffening up the pole arm.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And it also gave him the ability to take on the terrain. But Rafa had the same thing. Rafa had one of his commands had two medium sword impact and a medium sword impetuous, which that's a bit odd, but it kind of works in a strange. I mean, it's slightly cheaper to get the army, you know. I mean, it may well be that they didn't have enough 8 points to get the medium sword impact. They had seven or something, you know, that combination sort of thing. But Rafa used it quite well as well. I do it with the Aztec. I have a brilliant general sitting with the two Kowalczyk elite impetuous medium foot.
Two I get. Two feels like a thing in its own right, but one is something that supports other. But does it give you a big enough cutting edge, or is it? Are we just obsessed with two?
There's a kind of a thing here that Simon's army is a little bit, not completely in any stretch, it's a little bit like the way I use the Vikings. You've got the head swordsman, you know, all right, they're two-handed weapon or whatever in the Viking army, but you've got a brilliant general to control the medium sword impact, impetuous, but if you've got two medium sword impact with them, that's really quite powerful, and it works. You can combine impetuous with impact really well.
I've played this where someone's also used the two impetuous and the three impetuous levy as well, because they're just so cheap. They have their pros and they have their cons, but it does give you it's surprising the number of people that don't play against impetuous levy and don't really understand how effective they can be, of course, as heavy foot. But just wonder whether, Simon, you'd looked at that as an idea.
No, I've tried the
impetuous. You're allowed to say no, it's a mad idea, so don't worry.
I've come to learn to respect impetuous levy, especially having seen the Spartacus army and the various other options. They are quite tough, and they are surprisingly good as damage sinks.
Yeah.
They've got they don't have a plus against much other than the impetuous, but they still are heavy infantry and. Yeah. To kill them, you have to properly go after the things. Maybe I should have tried them. For this idea, I was trying more, especially with the impetuous command, was having three, the two impetuous and the impact guy, allowed me to go through terrain. And it did do that reasonably effectively. And it also stopped a few of the Thracian style of armies who had the medium swordsman, two-handed weapon, because they rocked up and went, "Hi, I'm a two-handed weapon," and it's like, "Hi, I'm elite impetuous."
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you can see people go, "Well, hang on a second, you know, you got furious charge against me, blah, blah, blah." And the command, once I got through, I managed to get the impetuous going through the flank of a few armies, which was quite satisfying. So depends on the army and the day and the theme and all that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I must admit, I think what it comes around to, because going back, the theme of this was sort of no Romans, and it was supposed to be the armies that were pre-knights in Spain that the Spanish people thought were a bit rubbish, was sort of the theme, wasn't it? The underloved armies. And this one is just such a good list. It's really good. I think, you know, if there was a list of armies that must have only just scraped in there, I would have put this one as the last one standing on the threshold, hoping it doesn't get pushed out the door, really, because it's just really pokey. And each time I've played against it, it's been real problem to deal with.
Yeah.
It's just so surprised. Tough, it punches so hard.
Yeah, I was really surprised they allowed this, just because it is so scary. In some ways, if they had just said, "You can have the Warring States, but the Halberd only option," that makes a big difference, because very few people bring the halberd option. It lacks any real oomph.
Yeah.
This one is.
Hey, for sure.
Is all oomph. And being that you can have all the infantry elite.
So
you look at it, everything that had the impact was elite.
Yeah, and you don't need the extra three or four units if you're all elite and it's just got this much punch to it. So
yeah,
and those chariots go through all sorts of stuff, really, don't they?
So what army did you, did you win against, Simon? Where did it really work well?
It had great fun tearing apart an Assyrian army. The Marcos Hittite army, I think it was, with the mad combination of different chariots. And anything that had foot or mounted that couldn't evade as quickly, it really had fun with. The two armies that tore me to pieces were the Alans and the Bedouins, just because both defended in the open, and it was an open table. And I did play Jean-Louis Mastrio and played him to a draw, because with his Thracian army, he basically hid half his army in forests for the entire game. It wouldn't come out, so he punched half his army down the flank, and then I sat out in the open and proceeded to tear the rest of the army to pieces. So we played to a very violent draw.
Yep.
Good. Okay. Well, look, you know, I think that's, I would probably say that's my favourite list of all of them. Even though Dave Allen's did better, I thought, well, you know, I enjoyed using mine, but I worked out how it wasn't very clever, and it ended up very similar to a sort of Rafa Seleucid army in a lot of ways. So it was less innovative than it looked. And it was sort of the only successor in it. But I think I would vote for Simon's. Dave, if you were not voting for yours, which one would you go for?
I probably, well, I wouldn't go for Gordon's. And I probably wouldn't go for yours, Tim.
No, I think you're right.
So it would be a toss of the coin between Mark's, Simon's, or Dave Allen's. I would probably go, if I wanted to be interesting, I'd go Dave Allen's army and take a risk, because I like the included generals and the strategist nonsense. But Simon's army, I will probably play at some point. I want to play that army.
It's almost in a little category of its own of that just is good, isn't it? Maybe it's some... because I actually thinking about it, Mark's, I think there's a few tweaks to yours that, you know, I look at it and go, oh yeah, that would be and I guess it's a few tweaks to Dave's as well that make it somewhat better. Gordon, what about you? Obviously, oh, you were
through the lists when the theme was published and thought, oh, they made a mistake here letting Warring States in. I thought, well, that's the obvious thing to take. You're not going to do badly with that, and you'll probably do very well. But then I decided I didn't want to be morally suspect, so it was down to which mad list I was going to take. And it was either go back to the Numidians with an all-mounted army or the Ancient British. And I thought, well, I haven't had the Ancient British out for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's different, isn't it? Yeah, for sure.
And they've got the Sacred Camp. That was the decider.
That's the winner. That's it. All right. Mark, what about you?
I think for me, out of the lists that we've been talking about, our list, then it's got to be Simon's Warring State. I have the figures somewhere in the cupboard. I've just got to find them. You know, it's the usual problem for me. I'm not as organised as Gordon is. It was a toss-up for me about whether I was going to bring a Parthian or not. And the Parthian that basically took me to pieces, I think I got 6 or 7 points off him, and he completely annihilated my army in 2 goes, was an exact mirror of what I was going to bring. That doesn't say I would have played it as well as my opponent did, because he came third. But I quite like that. So I like Simon's. The thing I really like about it is those heavy chariot impact elite. I think they're a really underestimated troop type in the army, or actually in the rules fundamentally. So that would be for me. Plus, it's a really colourful army. And I did actually, luckily, once in the Dimmen distance, actually go and stand and look at the Terracotta Warriors actually in Xi'an. So it has other meaning for me as well. But and as I said, there's some beautiful figures. So I think two beautiful ones in 15 mil. Yeah.
Not necessarily these ones, which are mine. I'm sure
they're beautiful figures as well, Tim.
I'm sure they are lovely. So, Simon, what about you, coming up to you last as your world's most popular army? Who else would you have been forced, you know, arms tied behind your back to have?
Aztecs.
No, the Aztecs I probably wouldn't do, because I'm too mad and crazy. I would have gone most likely either Marx or Gordon's. Probably not as mad as the full chariot, because I'm probably not as skillful as a player as Gordon to make sure I don't get charged in the rear everywhere. But I would have got, I was very tempted to go for the mass heavy and medium swordsman impetuous. Also, so I can bring my Stonehenge as my sacred camp, purely on that choice. And just
that's a pretty decisive call, actually. I think that may be the card to play. I think
the various tourist things you find, like, oh, a Stonehenge, I'll buy that and I'll bribe the army around that. I probably would have gone something like that, just for something mad and silly. And they do look pretty with all the shield transfers, the mad hair, and all that. So pretty is always good.
Good, Grant. Well, I think that sort of wraps it up then. And I think
how about Tim? How about you? Where would you go with the army?
No, I think I think Simon's is such a good army that it almost feels morally bankrupt to choose it because it was almost too good. I think looking at it, I think there's stuff with yours and Dave Allen's to do. I've used those sorts of armies before, and I do enjoy using them. Aztecs is vastly intriguing, and of all the armies I've on the list, that's the one I've not I don't own and I've never tried and all the rest of it. But that's just a painting project for the next couple of years sometime, so that will come around at some point. But I think if maybe it's just a case of being reminded how good the Warring States actually is, and it's one of those armies that I almost sort of veer away from because it feels so competent, but it's really interesting and really good. And maybe I do need to, dig those figures out of whatever tray they're in and actually try and use it for it. But I think here we go. We actually not obviously, somebody else is trying to get in sponsorship to compete with McHugh Carpets. But we did get a trophy between us from Wargamers Whims for being the top group of eight people who sort of came from the same place.
Fantastic.
I think that was it. So it was like eight Brits, and our aggregate score was more than the aggregate score of any other eight people who sort of came from the same place. So we got this delightful trophy. So thank you for Rafa. And I think we probably do need to then sign out of what's been a very, very long podcast and a bit rambly, and will be a very interesting video if I manage to cut it all together. So I think saluting everybody, off we go. Signing out from all of us from the castle bunker. So thank you for coming. Goodbye from everybody. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave, in absentia and on video. And we shall maybe return with more podcasts soon.
Yeah.
Right. Catch you soon, guys. Cheers. Bye. Bye. Hello and welcome to the latest MadAxeman.com Army List ADLG podcast, in which I'm joined by Rick.